Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. We're recording this on June 27th, 2019, and hopefully it'll be up before the 4th of July. So happy birthday, America. We are joined today with just the core crew of Alex.
Hello.
Did you not say anything?
Alex? No, I had put it on mute and then forgot. Do you want to start over?
No, I think everyone should know your failure. And we're also joined with Kyle Burrick.
Hello.
See, that's how you do it. So welcome. We had Becky on, I guess, about 2 weeks ago, and you know, we try and do these shows when big news breaks, and nothing has really happened in the month of June. So we're gonna kind of circle back. We're gonna talk a little Toy Story. We're gonna talk about some of the smaller announcements they've done. And we'll see what happens. It's just been, I don't know, Kyle, you do kind of run our news desk. It's, you know, basically, like, since March, I feel like we've been go, 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 go. Every day there's, like, something crazy, something big, something to talk about. And, like, once Galaxy's Edge opened, I mean, obviously Toy Story 4 came out, and, you know, there's other things that happened, but it just seems like a lot slower.
Yeah, I usually judge a day by how many times I need to go to Google and just type in Disney, and then from there, how many times I need to, like, adjust it to, okay, what just happened in the last 24 hours, to, okay, what just happened in the last hour, and these stories get smaller and smaller, and I've had to go down to the 1 hour mark pretty much every day for the past couple weeks.
Wow. Yeah, we're not complaining. Disney shouldn't do things on our schedule, but
I think it's the expos coming up, and so anything, any sort of announcement of any size is being held.
And you also have Comic-Con coming up, you know, which probably from a Marvel standpoint is probably their next big hoopla. It's interesting that I swear I was like, oh, the expo. I guess this was like after the second expo. Where I said, oh, the expo just happened, so like it's probably going to be pretty slow like for the next couple of weeks because they just announced everything. And then maybe like a week later, they announced Pandora. It's just like the ink hadn't dried yet or something. So, you know, I think expo is a big part of it, especially on the park side. Like, I feel like they really like to make a big splash at expo. You know, studios, I think, will kind of just take it as they go, but I think you're probably right, Kyle.
They might not want to make too big of a splash.
Well, I'm not going to even go there. The big sort of Disney thing that happened was Toy Story 4 came out, and we've all seen it. And I want to go to our resident movie expert first. Alex, Toy Story 4.
It's good, bad, ugly. It's really good. It's, I had a early look at it. So I've been of the mindset that it's a really great film for probably about 3 months, because I'd seen about the first third and then some bits and pieces back in early April. And I wasn't that excited for it to begin with, but they really impressed me. I really like the story that they told. The new characters are really fun. They feel very fresh. And that's the thing about it that I think is most impressive, is it's the fourth outing for these characters, and it does retread a little bit of plot that's been experienced before in the franchise, but it still feels new. You know, and I like where they ended. I don't want to give any spoilers, but I know some people, you know, want another one because they don't love the way this one wrapped everything up. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a really good character journey for Woody.
Okay, so I am going to spoil it just because it's Toy Story 4 and it's, you know, 2 weeks after it came out. So what you doing? Not specifics, but...
Well, so if you haven't seen it, skip ahead like 5 minutes.
I think Avengers Endgame spoiled me. Because, and I'll explain this. So I saw the film, I think, in less than ideal circumstances. That's not true. I saw it in great circumstances. I saw it at the El Capitan on opening night. But I was very distracted. And I, with other work stuff. And I enjoyed the movie. I laughed a lot. I thought it was very funny. I think the Toy Story films all kind of retread the, you know, I need a child to play with me bit, and that's all that matters. But that's just kind of what they are. But the film was marketed as, like, the perfect ending to the Toy Story franchise. And I feel like Avengers Endgame wrapped up everything from the whole, from Iron Man to Endgame so perfectly that I don't feel that this film really kind of gave, it was a Toy Story 4 film in that it was, you know, started at the beginning and went through the end, but I don't feel it summed up and kind of wrapped up the entire Toy Story franchise. I feel like if it did, Andy would have had a bigger role. I feel like Buzz and Woody would have had a bigger moment. And I feel like it was the next chapter in the saga, but I don't feel that this is, it really gave off a culmination of Toy Story vibe, especially since Woody left Andy in Toy Story 3. So, you know, Bonnie's, what he does with Bonnie at the end of that movie, I don't feel is particularly noteworthy.
So the thing about Andy, and this they talked about at the press conference at the long lead, is when somebody asked the question, why even make a Toy Story 4? Because Toy Story 3 gives it such a great ending. They said Toy Story 1 through 3, they really view it as the Andy saga. And they said what they were trying to do with Toy Story 4 is really tell a Woody story. And I think you kind of look at all of the films as being Woody-centric. But what they really talked about was that Woody as a character hasn't really had very much growth. You know, in the first film, he kind of learned to make room for another favorite toy. But, like, beyond that, it's really just been Woody helping others. And Woody's whole world is wrapped up in, do I have a child who cares about me enough that I'm satisfied? And, you know, in this, and I will say, you know, at the end of Toy Story 3, you don't get that sense that Bonnie's trajectory is going to be such that Woody won't be a favorite toys of hers for very long, because he's the one that she kind of takes out of the preschool to bring home because she really likes him. You know, but in this one, we find him in the beginning, and he's far from a favorite toy. He's actually the only of the Andy's gang being left in the closet now at playtime, and it's happened so much that now he's collecting dust bunnies. So, you know, it's through.
I felt like that was forced.
Well, yes, you can. I can see that. I can see that for sure. But the thing about it, you know, is and here's the lesson that everyone kind of needs to learn is, you know, your sense of self-worth and dignity can't be wrapped up in just what one person thinks of you. And that's who Woody is. It's actually like a really psychologically damaging way to live. And so what they did is give Woody a reason to live and love life that is not wrapped up in one child who is destined to grow out of you.
But isn't it, I mean, that's acting like toys should have the same life goals as people.
What it is, well, is giving them an excuse to make a sequel and make more money. Filmmakers can make anything seem impactful, and they planned it all along.
But I mean, because we are in such a sequel dominated or just franchise dominated cinema era, like that's what it is. I mean, Disney Plus, I'm excited for it because it's going to give us more of the kind of smaller scale Disney films that we used to get that we haven't gotten in a very long time, because this is just the way the industry pretty much is now and the way that Disney chooses to operate. You know, but I mean, yes, that's true. But is it a solid film? And I say yes, it's very solid. It's really well done. It entertains from start to finish. It gives a lot of great laughs. It has a lot of heart. I think it ends beautifully.
I have no problem with them making Toy Story 4. I'm not the kind of guy who says, oh, you know, they finished it perfectly, why are they bothering? I mean, if they have a good story to tell, that's fine, and I'm that
Do you
I'm,
not
I
feel
have
like
no
they have a
problem with
good
that.
story to tell?
No, I think I like the movie. If I was a, you know, giving it a out of 5 stars, I'd give it 4 stars. I'm not saying it's a bad film. I just feel that the marketing of it, trying to convince me that this is the final film in the Toy Story franchise. And that, I mean, in the soft marketing through press conferences and appearances, I felt let down. It didn't wrap up the toy. It, I could totally see a Toy Story 5, and I wouldn't be against having a Toy Story 5, but this didn't end Woody's journey. It didn't end Buzz's journey. Toy Story is a,
well, where
it's hard. It's a buddy.
Where do you
film.
Think, where do you think Woody and Buzz's journey ends?
I don't know, but that's why I want Pixar to tell me.
Well,
I feel like if this was the supposed to be the end of Woody and Buzz's journey, they needed to give that a lot more.
You mean they
needed
to spend
time.
More than 5 minutes together?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he would. Buzz.
Well,
Buzz says
I, I've
goodbye,
heard that. I've heard that criticism of that the goodbye is way too quick. But. I rewatched Toy Story 3 after seeing Toy Story 4. I'd rewatched 1 and 2, but I ran out of time to watch Toy Story 3 before it came out, before I had to go to my screening of it. And Toy Story 3 has that long goodbye moment when they're going into the fire. And so it would be a complete retread because they had already had a moment in the trilogy and just in the last film where they all essentially said goodbye to each other.
But they don't, but they ended up not meet. I mean,
well, yes, but I mean,
like, I don't think I'm gonna die. I don't die. And then when I'm actually gonna on my deathbed, I don't go, oh, we already did this.
There are so many films that have, you know, that have a big adventure moment like that with a group where after that, everyone's kind of, you know, perception of life is, wow, I have to live it to the fullest. And often those films end kind of on a bittersweet note, you know, with a main character or something going off in a different direction. And I felt like this was, I didn't feel when I watched it like I needed more out of the characters to understand. You know, they had this, they all knew what was going on with Woody, that he was being left in the closet, that he wasn't happy and fulfilled. They watched him, you know, defy the room leader and go away to kindergarten with Bonnie. And then they watched him, you know, basically kill himself to get this new toy that doesn't understand what he needs to do to give back to this kid who made him. You know, I mean, it's a really weird, Woody's got a really weird purpose in life. And then they really call that out early on in the film. And then, you know, he rediscovers the one other thing that he had that was taken away from him, and he gets it back. And I think they all knew, you know, they were all together when Bo Peep went away. And so it was just this moment of understanding, like, okay, you've got her back. She's a different person. She's not coming with us. So it's either you go there or you come back and be who you were again and be miserable. So
I'm not saying,
you know,
that Woody Buzz
should
like
have been
like... I feel
like this is a close-knit friendship or family with these other toys. I feel like that look was so beautifully done, so well animated. I mean, I got everything out of it that I felt like I needed. You know, and they really... They even had Buzz and Jessie next to each other because it's been clearly established Buzz and Jessie are that couple. They're that relationship to one another. And Bo Peep from the first film was established as Woody's counterpart.
Right, but I'm not saying that Buzz should have held Woody back or shouldn't have. I'm just saying is if your best friend's leaving, and there was no rush. It wasn't like
there was a rush. The humans were getting in the camper. They were about to drive away.
Well, I mean, they cheapened it with a Forky joke. And I mean, I have no problem with Forky. I love Forky, but I feel like they should have just let that moment breathe a little bit more. As a filmmaker, they could have given them a few moments just to say, because at the heart, Toy Story is about the relationship between Woody and his owner and Woody and Buzz. That's where this film, this saga started.
Yeah.
Buzz was barely in this movie in terms of
he's in any way that mattered. Right.
Yeah, and you know, you go to the parks or you go see Disney on Ice or wherever. It's always Buzz and Woody, Buzz and Woody. And because that's what this is. It's a buddy film.
Yep.
Or a buddy franchise. And you can have Woody go on his adventure with Bo Peep, but
I would call it a buddy
franchise. Value in here was comedy.
I wouldn't call it a buddy franchise. I would say the first film is a buddy film. The second film is like a heist film. The third one's
going to get his friend.
The third one's a prison break film.
Right.
They're each different. It's weird. They all feel cohesive, but they each kind of really step into a different genre when you really closely examine the franchise. The first one's the buddy film. That's the only one. Buzz and Woody have always been central, but each of them have always involved Buzz and Woody being split up in some way, and then one of them coming to the other's rescue. And in this one, it's Buzz trying to go to Woody's rescue.
But barely.
But again, this is as a story, it's Woody's character journey to, you know, finding a new place for self-worth.
And about that journey, I mean, my problem with the film, like, I agree with both of you guys. Like, I thought it was really funny and I thought it was good. Like, I enjoyed it overall, but I mean, it wasn't 98% on Rotten Tomatoes good. And I felt like the problem with it was that obviously, they had this big idea. Okay, let's have Woody, you know, leave the gang and go off with Bo Peep. And I like that idea. But then I felt like they just threw too many other conveniences and ideas into it. Like, we want to have an antique store. Wouldn't that be cool? Oh, but what if there's this carnival? Oh, let's just put them across the street from each other. And then he sees a lamp, but Bo Peep's not even there anymore. She's over at this other playground, so they throw that in. And there's just so much going on. And then, in the meantime, they do want to do some retread, so of course they have to have a Randy Newman song and do 5 minutes of literally the exact same Forky joke without any big changes to it, even though I love Forky too. But I was just like,
I think the song is 2 minutes long.
Yeah, but he's still been trying to throw himself in the trash for several minutes before that too.
I love the antique store, and I really love the characters that they introduce. I love the whole pinball underground nightclub. I really even loved kind of what they did with Gabby Gabby, because they've already had several Toy Story villains, and I felt like we were going very much in another Lotso direction.
Yeah, she's the surprise knockout.
They really flipped that on her. Right, and I really enjoyed that. I liked her character. I thought that was sweet. And I thought it gave me the first of two, like, teary-eyed moments in the movie. So I really did like that character, and I loved Duke Kaboom. But I don't feel as critical of it as you guys do. I really enjoyed it. I want to see it again. I've seen it the one time, but I'm excited to see it another time, hopefully in theaters.
Well, don't get me wrong. It's better than Secret Life of Pets 2, but
well, Panda.
And you mentioned Gabby Gabby. And obviously you liked her, Fanboy. Did you feel that she was properly redeemed before getting, you know, becoming fully not a villain? Because I've heard some people say that, you know, she tried to tear out Woody's voice box. Can't just forgive that because she decided.
It did make me a little uncomfortable where basically just because they have want something or have trauma that it's okay to do awful things.
Well, here's the thing is I think everyone's reading a little too much into the way she was planning to do it, because ultimately, you know, she's got him in the wagon. She's taking him into the back room after seeing the film and knowing, you know, who she really is as a character versus who they make her seem to be at first. I get the feeling that she was going to talk to him and tell him her story and ask him. The battle, like the chase with the dummies who aren't able to speak much, you know, they just grab and pull, and then he's struggling, and then it starts to come out. But even at the end, you know, she's walking towards him and she's then monologuing and telling him, you know, what her life has been as a result of being a defective lemon of a toy. And then he willingly gives it to her. And we don't know, but they set it up like it's menacing. The intention is to make you think that, you know, Woody's at risk of having his voice box stolen. But like after the fact, I feel like she's the type of character that would have asked for it, not taken. And if
but she still stole Forky.
She didn't steal Forky. She was just trying to get him back. But Forky got left behind, right? Or was he grabbed by the dummies? Like, I feel like the dummies are the ones who just aren't capable of speech and aren't really as smart as the other characters.
I don't know, she's not real, but...
The dummies aren't really toys, they're puppets, they're ventriloquists. Their purpose wasn't meant to be played with, they were meant to be...
But then how do they come to life?
Well, how does Forky come to life? And that
he's a toy.
I love that part at the end when the girl Forky enters the post-credit tag and she's like, why am I here? He's like, I can explain everything. And then her question is, how am I alive? And he looks at her and he goes, I don't know.
Kyle, you got any other thoughts?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, now that we've ruined a great thing, let's move on.
No, I mean, we
if
all,
it was
like,
so great, we wouldn't have to ruin
critical
it.
Critical is something you love. I enjoyed the movie. I'm not anti-Toy Story 3. Not put me in with those people who just hate it just because they don't want to.
I feel like that's what we just did. Like, we took a movie that we all sat down and enjoyed, Kyle maybe excluded, and...
I enjoyed it. My wife liked it even more. She cried. I didn't cry. No, I laughed. I enjoyed it. We decided to buy tickets because we were excited for it, and I enjoyed it. I just didn't think it was as great as, you know... I think partially is you look at the Rotten Tomatoes and you see how high it is and you go, okay, but it's not that great. Like,
I think everyone was expecting it to not be that good. And partially because of the marketing, you know, that first teaser with the Circle Game song and all of a sudden Forky just, you know, is out of the blue from nowhere and screams and it was annoying, not funny. You know, that put me off. It put a bad taste in my mouth from the get-go. But everything past that has been a pleasure.
So we basically all love Toy Story 4, just some of us thought it was a better film than others. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on, Pixar announced another new film directed by my favorite Pixar director, Pete Docter, called Soul.
And chief creative officer of Pixar Animation Studios.
Yeah. You know, I saw him at Target the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just wearing a white t-shirt.
Fascinating style.
Yeah, that's what he wears, like, when he's not... I don't know.
He is a hard person to hide. Like,
yeah, he's very tall.
You know, all of the other, like, Pixar talent, no matter how many bonus features you've seen, you know, you can walk by Jonas Rivera and not realize you're walking by Jonas Rivera, but you cannot walk down the street opposite Pete Docter and not notice Pete Docter.
So the log line on this is not a heck of a lot. Obviously, it's an original feature for 2020. It's the second original feature for 2020, following Onward in March. Would release June 19th, 2020, so presumably it's fairly far along in production. But the logline is, ever wonder where your passion, your dreams, your interests come from? What is it that makes you, you? In 2020, Pixar Animation Studios takes you on a journey from the streets of New York City to the cosmic realms to discover the answers to life's most important questions. Soul is directed by two-time Academy Award winner Pete Docter for Up and Inside Out, and produced by Academy Award nominee Dana Murray from The Loose Short. So that's all we have for you.
I think it's
very
a,
Pete Docter-y.
I think it's like a Marvel abstract crossover.
Yeah, like I feel like the Soul Stone's right in the middle there, right?
Definitely. And the cosmos and New York, both Marvel significant settings.
My favorite tweet that I saw come out of this was just a list, and it said, "Toys have souls, bugs have souls, monsters have souls, emotions have souls, cars have souls." Just went down the list of dinosaurs have souls of every Pixar movie and like what the thing is, and then finally it said, "Souls have souls." It was well done. Bravo to whoever tweeted that. I cannot remember to give you credit, but you deserve it.
Do they?
Yeah, they were
Okay.
brilliant.
Brilliant.
They're our, yeah.
So I know there's not a lot there, but what are we thinking?
I am just excited. I mean, I'm not saying that I haven't enjoyed a lot of the sequels that Pixar has put out, and especially like I think Cars 3 is the best in the franchise. Just talked about how I really liked Toy Story 4. But I am excited that Pixar is back to kind of a string of original films again, because I have missed that, and that was really what they were known for a very long time. So I'm excited for that. There's not really much to judge. We know the title, we know who's directing it. I do very much trust Pete Docter. He's your favorite director. Mine is Finding Nemo,
That guy,
Wall-E.
Andrew Stanton.
Andrew Stanton, thank you. But you know, I mean, I would put Pete Docter as my number two. I hope he's not listening, because if I meet him and he knows me, that will be awkward. But
Don't go to Target.
and I won't go to Target. Was it Target here or in Southern California?
No, it's here.
Here in like this
Where we
Target,
live.
the Target where we live, Pete Docter was shopping. Cool. Good to know. I'll keep an eye out. And
Can't miss him.
right, as I've said. But yeah, I'm excited. I trust him, and I'm excited to see what he's got up his sleeve.
Kyle?
I am in complete agreement. My favorite Pixar movie is Monsters, Inc. I love Up and Inside Out as well. So, of course, I'm on board for Pete Docter and an original film. It sounds interesting. People are wondering if they'll be like religious or spiritual, probably more so than religious, overtones, and could be interesting for sure. Sounds more adult.
You know, it's because Pete Docter is the kind of one that does all that heavy, heady stuff. Obviously, Inside Out, when we first heard it as the film that goes inside your mind, we were all like, "What?" Like I just had visions of John Malkovich, but
Or Cranium Command.
or Cranium Command, which he worked on. I just, as I said, he's my favorite director, so you kind of have to, much like Kevin Feige, where I just don't even question it. I just go with it and enjoy the ride. I'm just going to presume I'm going to love this movie, and until he proves me wrong, I'm not going to worry about it. Although
Cool.
we are supposed to get more information about this film
At the
at the
expo.
D23 Expo, so which I guess probably surprises nobody.
What a shocking place to reveal it.
We don't know anything about what's coming from Disney Animation after Frozen 2, or am I incorrect?
I believe you are correct. When I was there for Ralph Breaks the Internet for the long lead, we got to go up to level two, and then we could see up the stairs to level three, which is where the Frozen unit was. But level four of Disney Animation is elusive, and that would be where they were working on whatever is after Frozen that we can't.
Must be that
It's
movie Gigantic that they announced a few years ago and played a song for.
like, maybe.
nope, I don't think so. That's they must have put Gigantic is one of those movies where it must have been pretty far in development, because that they actually had to disclose that they canceled it in their financial statements. So I don't know how far it got, how much animation they did, or what, but that was odd.
I guess they didn't cancel it, they shelved it, so it could still resume production any day.
Any day now, even
Well,
though
and
I think,
they've done that before. Like they brought things back
like
well
Wreck-It
after.
Ralph. So moving on to the parks, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is officially open.
Ooh.
They did a boarding group system for the first day, Probably for the first couple hours. I think by early afternoon it was kind of done.
I was surprised by how negative the internet reaction to it was.
Galaxy's Edge?
No, the opening day kind of tiered entry process. Because everyone was just they're capping it and the ride is still only a 30-minute wait. People were using the ride's wait time as evidence of the land not being a success.
Which, by the way, is one of my biggest pet peeves. I'm not saying that it's not true in this case, but wait time does not equate popularity. You got to take popularity and factor in capacity, and then you have some idea. But just Dumbo can have a 90-minute wait, whereas Pirates of the Caribbean could have a 15-minute wait. But obviously, Pirates of the Caribbean is much more popular. But people just go by the number, which is not smart.
Yep. Yeah, and the capacity is seems pretty high on that attraction.
Yeah, the number came out at one point, and it's not a people eater like Pirates is, but it's definitely above average. Mm-hmm. So, you actually went to Galaxy's Edge, Alex. What did you think?
I was really impressed with the land. It is weird when you enter it how much you feel like you've left Disneyland. You kind of forget how you got there and that you're still in that park, which is a weird moment of realization to have. And it's really beautiful. It's really immersive. I mean, it is massive in terms of width of the walking paths, which was a surprise. I was expecting there to be a lot of pinch points, and they've really made it hard for that to happen. We went on the last reservation day, and I think your experience there would be much better now that they've got the ability to book your Ooga's Canteen and lightsaber experience.
Cantina.
Thank you. I keep doing that. Ooga's Cantina, that you can book that in advance and you know exactly when you're getting there and you don't have to deal with lining up and all of that. So I think that's all great. I do wish Ooga's was bigger, or they had found a creative way to expand capacity without losing that kind of intimate feel. Right now it's kind of a horseshoe shape of a cantina, and I feel like you could have either continued it around the opposite side where you still can only really see half of the space, or done something where it kind of snakes through and becomes like an S. So no matter where you are, again, just your peripheral vision is limited and it doesn't feel like you're in a huge space. But clearly the demand for it was higher than they built a space for. And I'm curious, I'm guessing it's too late for Disney World to fix that since they're opening just in a month and a half. But that's one area that I feel like they could have, should have done a little bit differently. We got to go in. They really want you out of there fast. It's there's very few seats. There's a couple of booths along the wall, but there's the bar and there's no benches or no stools. So you're standing at the bar. And then there's these weird little semicircle island counters that are also standing room. And they really pack you in. You're shoulder to shoulder. We were there early at 8:45 in the morning, so they were still on their breakfast menu. But you could get all of the drinks. They have a lot of fun drinks. The Fuzzy Tauntaun is kind of a show in and of itself. It's fizzing and bubbling. It's got these little green jelly beads in it. And Fanboy got one of the souvenir drinks. They have a lot of drinks that come with a collectible mug, and I was surprised when we got home. It said first edition on the bottom because they serve it to you in a glass, and then they tell you don't worry, that's not yours to keep, that's ours. We'll bring you your boxed one to take with you. But they have a two drink maximum. You have to leave after your two drinks. But we weren't offered
which
more.
Is like the opposite of every other bar I've ever been to.
Right, Right, because they've got a line out the door, or I guess a reservation system that relies on you getting out of there. But like, we weren't asked if we wanted anything else. They took our drinks. We both got a little small thing to eat for breakfast, and the receipt was right there. So we took the hint, but we got a really nice spot right in front of DJ Rex. So we probably were in there for, I don't know, would you say 10 to 15 minutes, fanboy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to feel like they gave us the bum's rush. They kind of, it's the kind of bar where they kind of just put
rushed.
Your tab in front of you no matter what.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you can add to it. You know, and we obviously, we were a little antsy too. It's the first, you know, we were ready to go.
Yeah, I know I had personally overestimated how long it would take to kind of see the rest of the land. And I mean, there is a lot to see, and it's beautiful. But like, shopping wise, the one thing that I wanted was the Hasbro Black Series 3 action figure packs, which if you're interested in those, word of advice, go to the Emporium where they carry all three and just buy them in one transaction, because in the land, you have to go to three different spots to get them, and they do sell them outside. But a lot of the like exclusive merchandise that you could only get once you're in there didn't really appeal to me too much. I've seen a lot of reports of things selling out, I guess, like by the opening day, the Toydarian toy shop, which has those like handmade looking plushes of certain characters. I guess they had already sold out of Ewoks and Chewbacca. And so they were swapping in the standard Ewok and Chewbacca plush from Mickey Star Tears. A lot of people weren't too happy to see that. But I mean, the shops are really fun to wander around. We took a walk through the quick service restaurant. That looked really neat. The food didn't look particularly good. And some of our friends that we bumped into who had been before confirmed that it's not all that great. We did go to the little Spitfire roast with the pod racing engine cooking the meat. What was that called, fanboy?
Ronto's Roasters.
Ronto's Roasters. We tried the jerky, which was tasty, but so chewy. And then the
chewy.
That's what I was going for. The little I don't remember what it's called. It's like a hot dog shawarma. That was really tasty. Really liked that. We did not try the exclusive popcorn, the red and purple popcorn. But, you know, we stayed in there for about 3.5 of our 4 hours. What we spent a lot of time doing was playing in the Play Disney Parks app. And that was really fun, going around scanning different codes. And sometimes it becomes kind of like another character is texting you and messaging, and you're trying to help them accomplish things or find things. So it almost becomes kind of scavenger hunty. That was fun. It eats your battery real fast. So be warned. Fanboy and I both took our batteries down into the red zone in like under 3 hours playing that.
And there's no fuel rod stations in Galaxy's Edge.
No fuel rod stations, which seems like weird because you would expect that they would have like fuel rods for your droids. We walked through the Build-A-Droid. We actually waited in line, but by the time we got up there, it took longer than expected. And no one could really give us an estimate of how long that experience was going to take. So by the time we got inside, we were maybe still 10 minutes from getting to build our droid. It was time for us to go to Uga's. But that is weird because they do not really have an extended queue for it. And I'm guessing their expectation is that the demand is going to die down. But it's very clear that they weren't expecting it to be as popular as it is. Because from what I understand, they are sold out of the microchips that allow you to program your droid to be either on the side of the First Order or of the Rebels. Or what's it, is it still called Resistance? Thank you. I knew it was something different. I just couldn't remember it. So, you know, that piece of it, that functionality that they kind of hyped up, isn't available at the moment. After getting in line and getting our pass to come back for Uga's, we went straight to the lightsaber and got in line. And they were telling us, you know, you can wait if you want, but odds are you're not getting in during your 4-hour window. And so we walked away. But from other people I talked to who had done it, they were disappointed because they only had blue lightsabers left. So, you know, they kind of sold it to you as you can do all this customization and you can really make it unique to you. But when you get up there after waiting all that time and forking over $200, you find out that there's only blue. And I felt like from a guest service standpoint, they should have been advertising that. Like, as you're going to line up, they should have said, just so you know, you're in this line. All we have is blue. And I wasn't hearing that. Same with the droid thing. You know, we waited all that time. And they could have been saying, you know, we've got the droids. We've got all the parts, except we don't have those chips. So if you wanted that, you might want to save this and come back another day to build your droid.
Although I think you can add those after.
You could. Yeah, you could retroactively add it. You know, but it's still, I don't know. Like, it's the kind of thing you maybe just want to do once and be done.
What it's interesting to me was I kind of went into the land thinking I was going to buy all this junk.
Yeah.
And
you didn't buy it. You bought a Diet Coke.
Well, that was more for not even really the novelty. I was thirsty. But
and you wore your shirt from Star Wars Celebration.
But, you know, it's been well reported. It's not like a logo merchandise kind of place, you know? Mm-hmm. And there was a lot that was sold out. You know, some of the things that might have, I thought it would have been cool. But in the end, I'm a Star Wars fan, but a casual Star Wars fan. You know, I like going to the movies. I like watching the shows. I know what a Bantha is, and I know what midichlorians are. You know, I get that. But in the end, I have no desire to role play. And there was just so much. It's like, if there was one signature item, I might have gotten it. But, for example, like when Pandora opened, I got a Banshee because that's what you did in Pandora. But I didn't feel the need to get a Kowakian lizard monkey because that was like one of like 20 things. So it's almost like there was too much.
Yeah, and even when we went in, what was that one shop with all of the like higher end collectibles and the animatronic?
Oh, Doc Ondar's.
Doc Ondar's. Even in there, you know, the lady's showing us the holocrons, the Jedi and the Sith holocrons, and it's like it was cool, and it was neat that she was, you know, demoing it. But at the end of the day, it was like, well, this is a $60 like twisty talky game of Simon.
Well, and they didn't have the Kyber crystals, which kind of
takes
the fun out of it.
There you go. That's another thing. So it's like, how do they have so many? Like, why are they making so few of the accessories that are clearly going to be like a must-have for a fan? You're not going to buy the holocron and not buy all the kyber crystals to go with it.
I heard Bob Iger talk about how the merchandise sales have really blown their minds. So, I mean, it's easy for us as fans to say, hey, this is going to be big. But merchandise is inherently conservative because they just don't want to have to. And I mean, I'm not saying that as an excuse. True.
But don't they do any kind of like, because I mean, Disney is famous for asking a seemingly random question in a survey. And then a site or a blog will be like, hey, it's asking this question. And then everyone jumps to a conclusion about, you know, what their motives are. You would expect that at some point they did some kind of research into the fan community to find out, like, hey, if we're making such and such a thing and it costs this much and for an additional fee you can get these other things, you know, would you do it?
I don't think we appreciate the fact that for the first whatever month it was open, it was only the nut jobs, right? It sold out like us. It was people that happened to know, and it sold out within 4 hours. So it's people in the know. It's not a casual Disneyland guest. Yeah. It's not, you know, the people that make the bulk of Disneyland. You know, what if I figure for like 20% of Disneyland on a given day, maybe less, it was able to get into Galaxy's Edge. And it's the 20%. It drew, you know, we were there. How many people did we hear? Oh, this is my sixth time. It's my eighth time. They booked the people that are the hardest core fans were the ones who were there.
Yeah.
And so, well, partly probably because they kind of perceived that if they didn't go then, it was going to be crazy. It's not so much as it turns out, but, you know, they've never done anything like this. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's fair to really, you know, we have no point of reference.
Yeah.
But I think they got excited and they bought everything. And
I mean, if they did have pricing in like a survey, the difference between seeing it on paper and going and experiencing it for yourself and like, okay, I'm going to buy it. Like how many people say
and
when
getting
they raise
caught up in
AP
the
prices, they're
moment.
not going to
Yeah.
renew, and then they do.
True. True, true, true.
And the lightsaber thing, it's, you know, I mean, all that is to, I've heard nothing but great things about it. And it's not that you get a cool lightsaber, which you do, but it's just like this special moment for people. So they want to have that. Whereas, you know, do you really expect that many percent of a typical guest with families? I mean, how many, we saw like almost no kids there.
That was weird. Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like, this place is always going to be filled with parties of four who all want their own lightsaber and are going to spend 4 hours in the in one land of Disneyland.
True.
And so, you know, and I don't know what their, you know, pipeline is. I don't know if more are on the way and just they had bad pacing.
Well, I
You know, it's
wish
not
we
like
had
this.
like.
It's not like the shelves were bare. So, you know, they did have product. So
Yeah.
they might have just picked the wrong ones, or it might have been, you know, they had plenty of quacking monkey lizards available. They had plenty of
Well, but
holocrons.
I had read that there was at least a day where they were out of Kwaki monkey lizards. And also, I guess one of the stuffed animal plushy pets in that store, some kind of a I think a loth cat or something like that, which is something that I want to say is from the animated counterparts and not from the live action films, but that sold out and
Lucky
people
them.
were
That was
upset because
trouble.
they wanted it.
Yeah, I think, and who knew? Like, if you're in merchandise at Disneyland, who thinks that this creature from Star Wars Rebels is going to be like the big hit? Nobody.
Yeah.
Huh.
But is
And
that the thing
so,
that they have sleeping in that crate? Is that a loth cat? There's like an animatronic, cute little, I don't know, dog or cat like thing with a long tail that's in a crate sleeping. And like it
it
just
might
sits there
be.
breathing, kind
I
of.
didn't look very well.
Okay.
But yeah, you know,
Because they're basically selling it to you there, whether you know what it is or not. And then they're like, oh, but we don't have it.
it's just easy for us as outsiders to say, oh, you know, they should have more of this. Well, obviously, now that we know, hindsight's
Yeah.
2020, but we're also not the people who are going to get in trouble if they have to ship out 80% of the stuff to Company D. So,
Gabanini.
You know, I agree that it is not as good of experience when it's sold out, especially with the lightsaber. You know, I feel like that's, you know, that is something that they should have had a little bit more foresight on.
Yeah.
But you know, a crystal, like an add-on chip to something, a $40 item. I don't know. I don't know that I, if I took myself out of it, would have been like, oh, these are going to be hot items. It turns out they are. They went viral in a way, but I don't know that that was expected. But and I know we talked about it a little bit, but I want your take on Galaxy's Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run.
Well, I got to do it twice. I never got to pilot, but you did. Our first time doing it, we were with a family that had already done it a couple times, and they knew the drill, and they did a really good job piloting and being the engineers, and we were gunners, and that was fun, and we did pretty well in terms of like the actual changeable game aspect of it. And then our second time, we were with a family of four who really didn't know what to expect, had a hard time kind of figuring it all out. It was a bumpier ride, and we didn't do as well in that like interactive moment that can change your fate. And so that part, like, I guess it is weird. Your total experience once you're on the ride itself is really contingent on the people around you. The queue gets progressively better and better as you go through. And what's really neat about it, that I hadn't really heard many people talk about, is you've got that giant Millennium Falcon photo op out front, which had a pretty big line that we weren't willing to wait in. But the queue, you start on the lower level and then you wind up in the back through these ramps in this kind of cargo bay. And then you come around and suddenly you're at these panoramic windows on the upper level, looking close at the top of the Millennium Falcon. And if you're doing the game in the app, it's asking you questions about it to try and help solve a puzzle about all of the modifications that have been made to the Falcon over the years that whoever you're communicating with lost track of. And so that's really cool, the level of detail and film accuracy and things like that. And then when you go on the ship, it's really cool. We got lucky, I think, both times. People seem to really understand that the chess table is a photo op, not just a place to sit. It is the, like, you know, they hand out cards in groups of six, and you have your assignment and a color, and they call you by color to board. So it's almost like the closest thing I can compare it to is the Jimmy Fallon experience at Universal, but much better done. Your actual waiting time is pretty quick. I don't think we ever waited more than 3 minutes in that area before our color was called. Meanwhile, you get to walk around and see and touch and explore. And that was really cool. So I think everyone kind of unanimously agrees the real highlight is that specific moment in the queue. And the attraction's well done. And, it's not so herky jerky that if you get queasy easily from simulators. Like, I find this to be a much smoother ride, less of a motion heavy experience than Star Tours is. So if you're someone who gets nauseous on Star Tours, I would still encourage you to try this unless you're so motion sick that even riding the train gets you. But this was, I think, a really well done way to do it. And especially if you're with like an expert pilot who's going to give you a smoother ride, you're going to have an easier time.
I have a lot to say about this ride. So I think the setup is cool. I think overlooking the Millennium Falcon is a highlight. They have the AA there of Hondo. Just the loading process is fun. Kind of like Back to the Future ride at Universal or Simpsons where, you get to have your own little private moment, which I think is fun. But the ride itself is way too contingent on guest input. And I don't know how I would feel if this was like a secondary ride to the main ride as sort of originally envisioned. But that first time there were, I guess I would say the guests were just like way too into it. And the second time the guests were totally not into it at all. And I don't mean that. It just like in terms of their ability to figure out what's happening. And so it just felt like I felt inadequate doing my job on the first group because like I felt like I was letting them down. Now, the second group, I was just like I didn't know what to do because we couldn't do anything right. And, the first time I was a gunner, I guess, or whatever they call it, and I put on automatic because I really wanted to see what was happening. And, I just pushed the button when it blinked. So fine. But the next time I was a pilot and I really wanted to be the right pilot because I wanted to put in the hyperspace, which I thought was fun. But the piloting itself was because you only have one access, one pilot does left and right, one does up and down. It's just sort of frustrating if the other person doesn't figure out how to pilot. So I don't, and unless you have a group of six that, it's just kind of that you trust and you're going to have fun with together, you're relying on strangers of various abilities to get full enjoyment out of it because you want to succeed inherently because we're human. And in the end, it's not that exciting if you don't even try. If you just sat there, it's boring. So I don't know. Disappointed is not the right word. Obviously, that room is cool with the table. Seeing the Millennium Falcon, seeing Hondo is fun. But from a storytelling perspective, the ride's just, eh. What do you think? Think I'm right?
I mean, I wouldn't say eh. I wouldn't say it's unenjoyable. But I do agree. Like, your experience is very much contingent on the other guests that you're with. And sure, there's a lot of attractions where other guests can kind of ruin things for you. I feel very much that way around like Haunted Mansion Holiday when everyone is la-la-lying in the stretch room and annoying you. It is, you're right. The experience is a little too reliant on who you have and their interest in what you're doing. And I can only imagine, you know, if you waited 2 hours for it would feel like a pretty big letdown. We only waited, you know, if 20 minutes both times that we did it. I think the second time we did it was pretty much a walk-on. First time we did it, we maybe waited 10 minutes in an actual standing queue. We took our sweet time going through it because that Play Disney Parks app, there's actually parts of it that you can only do in the queue for Smuggler's Run. And what was funny was there wasn't much of a line. So one of the cast members noticed that we were trying to do the activity from a distance. And he was like, "Oh, you can press that gate and open it up and go into that expanded section of the queue if you want to do the game." Yeah, so it was interesting, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was well done. What really gets me is the theming. And I will say this, as a big fan of Harry Potter and the Universal lands, you know, for me the best part of both of those of the main attraction pre Hagrid's motorbike, which I haven't done yet, and I don't want to wait in the line that Mike Mack has done. But you know, the A part of the experience is the queue going through Hogwarts. The B part is the ride. Like that's like the way to get out of there. But if they would just let you walk out the front doors again, I'd feel just as satisfied, if not maybe more so, because I'd be a little less queasy.
I was also surprised with how much I thought the Play Disney Parks app, I guess that I enjoyed it as much as I did. I've been playing the Disney Parks app, played Disney Parks app since it started, and it used to be, I mean, in some ways, it's still very glitchy and not very well thought out. And I was kind of playing with it just to kind of get ready for Galaxy's Edge because they talked about all this stuff. I was like, you know, this is going to impact your experience, yada, yada, yada. And
None of that was there, which
yeah, and I think
I
that's
was
for
not
the
excited
best.
for it, and I'm happy that it's not. Yeah.
Right. And so it just became a game that you can play with within the land. And there was no pressure. Like, you didn't need to finish it. There was no start or stop. It's just like little puzzle games that you could play while you wait, and or even just while you're kind of milling about. So I just thought it was kind of perfect. I mean, I'm sure you could get really hardcore into it, as people do with anything, like Sorcerer's of Magic Kingdom or whatnot. But as a casual person, you can just kind of play with it and see what happens and enjoy it for what it is and not make a big deal about it. So, but obviously the big Disneyland news this week was that they have removed merchandise from the Main Street Cinema. So Kyle, you were following this probably closer than anybody.
Do we
What
mention that they
happened?
put merch into the cinema?
Well, I guess for them to take it out, they would have had to put it in. I don't know.
Yeah, I just didn't know if we had mentioned that. I don't remember when we recorded the last show if that had happened yet.
It had not yet happened. I mean, the merchandise in the cinema lasted for a
was a,
day.
no, it was like a week.
Yeah, I don't think we covered it because we took the week off.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so basically we, not we, people showed up one morning. I think it was actually on the morning of the 60th anniversary, so it was a Friday. Of the monorail and the what Matterhorn and the subs,
Oh, yeah, that's right.
yeah. So Mike Celestino was there, and he walks by Main Street Cinema and notices they have a sign outside that says like cartoons and collectibles, and there's a cast member. And then you walk in, the lights are kind of up higher, and they have different merchandise. I think in this case, I guess the idea was that they were going to be doing different collections and like seasonal things. So it was all like patriotic theme. There were spirit jerseys and mugs and all sorts of stuff. And they have a register in there. So they're still showing all the cartoons, except that there's people milling around and buying things and shopping. And the Twitter fan community did not like that.
So I want to give credit where credit's due. When Mike went there to kind of report on it, the management that was there was very open to letting us video it and was actually looking for feedback. So while we, you know, I think many people were not thrilled with this development, you know, it wasn't. They didn't they did it, I think, as an honest mistake. I don't think. You know, they were very friendly about it. They didn't call us telling us to take it down or, they didn't really give in to the sort of zeitgeist of the drama that was around it. They just took it out, and I think what happened happened, and that's probably the best, you know, what should have happened. So I don't want to make this sound like evil Disneyland, because I don't feel that way about this, but, you know, I just want to be fair to them.
It was also weird. Like, the next day, people thought that they were already removing it because it was blocked off, but that's because they had merchandise in there. So they actually had to close right. close the cinema in a different way that we're not used to seeing. So nobody bothered to ask Tilly what she thought, though.
We were there after they removed it, and they took away the turnstiles because, you know, you don't have turnstiles on stores. And it just felt weird.
It was weird. Now, I couldn't remember, and I think I'd asked you, but maybe Kyle knows. Was there like a wheelchair accessible entrance to the cinema with the turnstiles before?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, we couldn't remember either. Because, you know, I mean, it is, you remember them being there, so entering is a little bit weird. But that's one thing I was questioning, was like, was there a way for a guest with mobility challenges to be able to get in there?
I don't believe there was. I believe that's part of the reason they never really touched it, was because at the time there was no sort of accessibility route. So,
I mean, now that they're removed, I don't imagine the turnstiles coming back for that reason.
And then, you know, then is it an attraction, right? Because attractions are all about counting people who go through it.
Well, they have all those counters without needing a turnstile.
I mean, right, yeah. I mean, you could put a photo cell on it and, you know, but are they going to invest in that?
But do they even need to? I mean, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those attractions that shouldn't need to prove its worth in headcount.
Right.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know,
which is part of
it,
Main Street. It has a cinema.
At Disneyland Paris, they have these arcades on the side. So just like hallways, but then there's these little couple rooms where you can kind of walk in. There's one that's like fireworks and stuff. And it's almost like that, where the Main Street Cinema could just stay like that. It's just, it runs itself, you know? It's not like they really need to have, they don't really need to staff it. Hopefully they would notice if a projector went out or something. But, you know, it's, you know, unutilized real estate, but it's also not that much. Like, I understand them wanting to try to attract new people there and try to do new things, but at the same time, it's also not like a huge wasted space if it just stays.
I can see where they would have not realized the backlash that it was going to cause, because other Disney parks around the world, the cinema is a facade and the interior is a shop. I mean, at Magic Kingdom in Disney World, that's the art store on Main Street.
My gripe was not so much that they were selling merchandise in there. It was the type of merchandise they were selling.
Well, and it was
just
odd.
The same junk
same
that they had
everywhere
else.
Yeah, nothing special, nothing unique. I think if the merchandise that they had been selling was more film specific, you know, it may have been not as sharp of a sting.
Yeah, I mean, there's still the people that are just not gonna like it. And they're never going to like it. That's fine. But
yeah, I mean, if they had used it to launch a new collection, you know, and they just recently put out, it's only in women's styles. So I'm a little bit offended as a man, because I would love stuff like this for us. But they just put out a lot of apparel with some characters that they haven't really done much with. I think I saw a polo with Todd and Copper on it from Fox and the Hound. They had a shirt with the Muses, you know, and it's all across the way in the Emporium section, right next to the handbags, if you're looking for it. And it's a really cool collection. And, you know, if they had launched something like that, like, hey, we've got this new merchandise collection with all these great film characters that we haven't done much with in the past, and we're choosing to launch it at the Main Street Cinema because it's, you know, these characters leaping off the screen onto your shirts for the first time, you know, that'd be one thing. I think that would have been met with a lot more positivity. But they just put in the same, like, the same mouse ears you can get everywhere, and not even like the newest collection. It's not like it was the Magic Mirror or the Imagination Pink. It was just like,
I think that
would have
been more offensive, honestly.
possibly But I'm just saying, you know, it's the standard like black mini ears with the red bow. It's the standard Mickey Mouse Mouseketeer mouse ears. You know, there was nothing. It was the types of like Disneyland essentials that you get as a like first timer, and then never buy again.
Well, they did have American flags on a lot of the stuff. It was all their like 4th of July collection.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was everywhere.
Not all of it, but
a lot. I mean, it was the same stuff that was in the Emporium. Like, it really needed to be destination merchandise, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Is it's like Main Street is almost nothing but stores, and they needed another one.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I hate to be, you know, I really hate to be just a curmudgeon about these things. But
this is our most negative podcast.
Well, I mean, it's all about
expanding those benches now.
True. And we did see two couples sitting on them.
Yeah, well, you know, people like benches, I guess.
And Galaxy's Edge has done.
Right? They should have Tilly sell popcorn.
I thought it would be cool if they turned into like a gourmet popcorn stand.
Mm.
You know, just to give it something different, give a different vibe. It's not, you know, the same, you know, same stuff, different day kind of situation.
Sorry, I was going to say too bad they switched to Pop Secret because they could have like a Streetmosphere person in there as Orville.
Redenbacher walk around.
They have the stuff from I don't know how they do it with the artists, but the stuff from the New York exhibit and a lot of the Mickey's 90th stuff, you could almost turn it. I know they already have another art gallery, but if you turn it into like a cinema/gallery with maybe even some interactive stuff, like some of those Steamboat Willie displays and things, like it's still not ideal,
ooh,
but I could see it being more of like a whole thing.
I love hearing Disney buzzwords and things.
Thingamabobs, you know, put 1, 2, or 20.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the kind of thing that probably at Disneyland, knowing the way the guest culture really clings to, a lot of those historic things, and knowing that it's, you know, it was for the most part a very much untouched Walt original area of the park. You know, they probably just need to be careful. I feel like that Tiki Room, you know, are probably two areas of the park that they really don't want to touch too much, lest they anger the Disney fan gods.
Well, you know, it's funny because I remember when I first started becoming a Disneyland regular, and I would hear people complain about when they started showing Mickey Mouse cartoons in there.
Yeah, because it used to be like Charlie Chaplin silent films.
Right, and the funny part, I mean, I'm not against the Mickey Mouse cartoons, don't get me wrong, but...
Who would be?
Well, because it's a silent movie theater where they show Mickey Mouse, who's famous for, you know...
Sound cartoons. Yeah.
So.
True. But they could play Plain Crazy and Galloping Gaucho the way they were originally filmed. And then they could do, like, an Alice comedy and a Laugh-O-Gram.
They could, but they don't.
They could also show the Steamboat Willie Redux.
What was that?
Did you ever see the Steamboat Willie Redux?
No.
I guess it was actually at the D20. When I went to the exhibit in New York, they made it sound like it was premiering there and then would be on YouTube. But then Googling it, it seemed like it was actually at the D23 Expo years before. But anyway, what they did was they took the original Steamboat Willie and then had different animators and artists recreate different scenes in very unique styles and then put it all together. And I thought it was really interesting. And they had headphones, you know, that you could put on to watch it, so that it wasn't bothering everyone else, but everyone could watch individually. And I think that'd be cool to maybe just update it with something like that, that pays tribute to the original, but also offers something new. I don't know how you deal with that with capacity, because, you know, even something as small as that would probably have pass holders waiting in line.
That sounds familiar, but I remember it.
Well, they did it. There was a Star Wars thing like that. There was a fan-made initiative like to remake a whole Star Wars film where like all these fans dissected it and each took a minute. And like, so it'll like suddenly switch from like someone's like, you know, very, very elaborate, well-done model to like someone's Lego set, to like someone with like a piece of cardboard. It's fun to watch.
Have you ever seen Minnie Mouse's Electric Holiday?
Oh, don't save yourself. I don't say this jokingly. Like it's like the ring, that static video, and you die. Except like nothing actually comes to kill you, but you kind of wish it had because you just want to tear your eyes out. Don't look it up. It's real
bad.
It's
on YouTube.
Don't save yourself. If you are blissfully ignorant of its existence, stay that way.
And it starts okay. So don't get confused. Don't think like, oh, am I watching the wrong thing? No. Wait till you're about 40 seconds into it, and then it gets weird.
And then it just gets weirder. And then, for whatever reason, Sarah Jessica Parker and Lady Gaga show up. Like, stay away.
And just remember, it's official.
But nobody should have touched this thing. This is terrible.
Okay.
And I grew up in the Totally Mini era. I should be all about it. I'm not.
I like Totally Mini. Don't go breaking my heart.
Oh, I had a recording off Disney Channel of Totally Mini, but still, like, when I knew it was coming on in reruns, I'd get real excited. And there was like a whole merchandise explosion following Totally Mini. I can't remember if it was Totally Mini branded, but I had a plush Mini that came in like a little pink wardrobe. You would open that up and it had three or four different dresses you could change her into. I remember it fondly.
You had this?
I had that. I was a little girly boy.
Okay.
I had not one,
for sure, a mermaid.
But maybe... Well, I was going to say, I had not one, but maybe like 15 different Tyco Ariel dolls. Most of that was because I would do stupid things like lose her seashells, which I called newbie patty holders, and like then the only way to get more was to buy another doll. But I would also like take it in the pool and the hair would get destroyed, or I'd take it in the bathtub and wash its hair and the hair would get destroyed.
Gonna go past the newbie patty holders?
Well, so like I am told, I don't remember this, but I am told that like one of my worst, like, poorly behaved in public moments as a child was on an airplane, and I had the tray table down and I had somehow lost the seashells, and I'm screaming and just repeating the phrase newbie patty holders. I called breasts newbies, and I called bras and seashells newbie patty holders.
And this came from what?
This was just me as an amazing, curious 3-year-old.
Interesting. Okay.
But like, look it up if you
want
to
get to know you. The LPP.
But okay. I always reveal a lot. There's, I have a lot of childhood dramas, and this is my therapy. But if you look it up, or just go on eBay and look up Tyco 1989-1990 Ariel dolls, they had so many different looks and versions, and they would do like seasonal variations. So I remember having like a wintertime Ariel where her fin was like an iridescent white and it had like Santa hat fur instead of the little like gills around the sides. And they would do like a springtime one. They did all these color changing ones. When Little Mermaid the series happened, they made all these like different versions that were meant to tie into like specific episodes. It was really bizarre. And then I remember at the same time, like the push with Barbie was that Barbie and Skipper were babysitters of Kelly and Todd. I'm revealing a lot about myself and my knowledge of all these dolls. But then they had like Ariel is a babysitter set, and they invented like two twin mer babies to go along with the Tyco toys. I want a Toys That Made Us on Little Mermaid is where I'm leading. That's where this goes.
Sorry, I'm distracted by Electric Holiday.
Don't. Why do you have that on?
It's always on in my heart.
That's what's wrong. That's why you've become so bitter. That's your problem.
You might be right.
Oh my god! You have been ruined for the human race by that short.
So, anybody got anything else they want to talk about?
Emotional Whirlwind is open.
Yeah. You know what it looks like? It looks like Flix Flyers.
Yeah. I got to have a cool chat today with the production designer of Tim Burton's Dumbo. And his name's Rick Heinrichs. And I will say, you know, Tim Burton's version of Dumbo, I'm not a particularly a fan of it. But definitely I appreciate the visual aesthetic that he went for. We talked quite a bit about Dreamland. And what's really cool about Rick, and I didn't know this until like maybe an hour before doing this phone interview, is he went to CalArts. And he went to CalArts in the same class as John Lasseter, Brad Bird, Tim Burton, like that whole group. He worked for Disney Animation for a short time. He mentioned specifically on Fox and the Hound and Black Cauldron, and that's where he got to know Tim Burton pretty well. But kind of what was unusual about him compared to that group was most of those guys, this was their first college experience. They were all in their 18, 19, 20-year-old range. He was 22 or 23 and already had his bachelor's degree in design when he enrolled at CalArts and decided animation was something he wanted to go into. So his real passion he discovered after getting into 2D animation was more in three-dimension and stop motion. So he is actually the one who told Tim Burton when Tim Burton came up with the idea for Vincent that stop motion was the right medium to do it in, which obviously led to Nightmare Before Christmas, on which he worked. But their collaboration, and he doesn't exclusively work with Tim Burton. He did production design on Star Wars The Last Jedi. He's done some of the Pirates of the Caribbean films. He did Captain America The First Avenger. But their collaboration really kind of continued on for a long time. And he's worked on a number of my favorite non-Disney films, really from kind of the height of Tim Burton's success. And that includes Beetlejuice and Batman Returns. And Batman Returns being especially connected because of Danny DeVito and Michael Keaton both being in Dumbo. But he also shared, and this wasn't even on his resume, that he worked for WED Enterprises in his early career. And he specifically said WED, not Imagineering. So it was before that was rebranded. And this was when we were talking about Dreamland, because he talked about how, you know, at WED, something that always stuck with him was the way they would do dioramas and build these miniatures. And so it was very important to him that there were these kind of homages to that in Dreamland. And the Hall of Science specifically it serves a story purpose for one of the main characters, but it was also really kind of a hearkening back to those days of Disneyland. And Dreamland, you know, the film takes place kind of ambiguously in the 1920s or 30s, but he said he pulled in some 1950s futurism elements for that, really to kind of connect it to Disneyland and build some of that connecting tissue, which I thought was really cool. So that was a really neat talk. It's being transcribed as we speak and will be on laughingplace.com if you want to read the full interview. But I really had a lot of fun talking to him and thought he was a fascinating person to talk with.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Kylie, get anything?
Not really.
Okay.
You always leave it to Kyle to be the one to...
Oh, I'm seeing Endgame again this weekend.
Oh, we will be seeing 20 minutes of additional footage with Endgame.
Is it 20 minutes?
It's not 20 minutes. It's like 6 minutes.
Oh, I thought I'd heard 20.
No, it's like, I guess, a sneak peek at the movie that's coming out next week, and the deleted scene.
Oh, okay. And is the deleted scene inserted into the film, or is it separate?
It sounds like
I think it's separate.
I think it's all afterwards.
Oh, okay.
So really, you can just roll it in the last 20 minutes.
Like an extended. I thought this was going to be an extended cut.
No, I think Feige actually specifically said it wasn't. I think he just said that they're re-releasing it with some additional stuff. I think he's, I'd have to look up the exact quote, but I think it was like a deleted scene, a tribute, and some other surprises.
Now, what, well, I know there's a poster at some of the screenings that have been announced. What box office record are they trying to break?
They are 40 million from all time worldwide.
Okay. Do you think they could possibly draw enough people back to the theater this weekend to make 40 million?
No.
No.
I mean, not in America. I don't know about worldwide. Like, I think it could still, I don't know if it has any other markets to release in. I don't think it does.
Imagine.
It's going to be close.
It's
but no,
almost...
it's not like it's going to make 40 million this weekend, especially because it's not even getting like a full re-release. Like, my local theater is only going to have 3 times a day. So.
Yeah, we really had to, I mean, you know, with all the theaters out here in the Bay Area, you know, the one that has it, it happens to be the one that we go to most regularly, but we were looking at some of the ones that we occasionally go to just out of, like, convenience of it being in close proximity to things like a Disney store, and none of those were an option. It's specifically the one theater that we most regularly visit that's going to have it.
What was also frustrating was... the tickets didn't go, like, it wasn't like a, hey, tickets are on sale now. It kind of puttered out. So you really didn't even know where you could go.
I will say, then props up to the Alamo, because they actually put re-release.
Mm. Was it actually playing in a lot of places still, or had it pretty much run its course?
It probably depends on the size of the multiplex, but I think most still probably had at least a show or two a day.
Little Dallas Multiplex.
Yeah, I think because... the theater we ended up going to was still showing it, and then, you know, they didn't have any show times for Friday, and then they kind of changed. They also said re-release and changed the poster art to the Iron Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess that it's because it's weird. They announced it on like a whatever night, Monday night, but it really wasn't there until Tuesday night. But I don't know. I'm excited. I mean, I just love, you know, it just gives me an excuse to see it again. But
yeah, and I mean, I only got to see it the one time just for time purposes, and it's 3 hours. But, you know, I'm excited to see it again on the big screen. It is like less than a month before its digital release, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's July 30th and that, or something like that, late July, and then the Blu-ray comes out in early or middle August. Which I'd actually pre-ordered it the day before they announced the release date, so that worked out.
Oh, nice.
I wanted to get my Steelbook. Got to close it out right.
On Best Buy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I don't have a 4K player and they upgraded all the Steelbooks to 4K, so I'm just spending money for no reason.
Yeah, that's what we do.
It's the only way to get the Steelbook. And you know what I found is, like, I was buying those kind of packs for the like that came with 3D before I ever had a 3D TV. That's probably a bad example, but like I feel like 4K has the potential to go more mainstream. Like we got our 4K TV for $0, so it can happen.
But you were also kicking and screaming because you didn't want a 4K TV.
I didn't want a 4K TV because we don't have a big living room, and from everything I had read was that you don't get the benefits of 4K unless you have a TV that is over 60 inches. And really our wall, and I will say I was partially wrong about this, we had a 3D TV, we got a 4K TV in the same size, and it looks so much smaller on the wall because our 3D TV was had a border around it, and this one really doesn't. It's like the screen ends and there's nothing. So we probably could have gone up to a 60-inch in hindsight. I just didn't know that. But I will say you do notice the color spectrum. So I don't see a big difference with the TV size that we have of fine details from Blu-ray to 4K. But I got Little Mermaid in 4K, and watching that, I was really surprised by just how much wider the color palette became. And I hadn't noticed that before, even in the many times I've seen Little Mermaid on the big screen since the original release. You know, I think even most recently I saw it at the El Capitan with the Spark shorts right before the Signature Edition came out. And so, you know, it was like even on the big screen, you don't notice, you know, some of these really wider color spectrums that 4K is able to reproduce. So that to me, in the size of TV that we have, is what I really notice as a difference. So, I mean, now I'm at a point where, yes, I buy the 4K versions because I have a 4K TV. but I wouldn't say it's essential. It really doesn't change my view of it. And there have been a lot of movies where, as a Disney Movie Club member, I will wait a pretty long time and get them when there's a really good VIP member deal, so that I'm getting them on the super cheap, because I don't see much reason to pay extra money to get Captain America the First Avenger in 4K, for example. But they did just announce pretty much all of Phase 1 is coming out in 4K individual releases. I didn't see a multi-pack, but all three Iron Mans, both Thor films, are coming out, and I think all three Captain America films are out in 4K now.
So this is normally the part of the show where I'll talk about what's coming up, but not a heck of a lot. We're heading into 4th of July week, so you know things tend to be pretty quiet. We expect some more expo announcements. They were kind of doing something a day lately. We've got animation. Disney Channel's been announced. Disney Theatricals, a little song and dance. But
did you hear the controversy for Tangled, the series, or whatever they call it now?
Yeah, I did.
And that was interesting.
Yeah, that's the right word for that. I don't know what to think.
Well, I mean, it was weird because Tangled, the series, it was I think pre-release at the last expo. It hadn't debuted yet, but they carted out, you know, Mandy Moore and Zachary Levi and Jordan. What's his name from Newsies?
And Jeremy Jordan,
thank you. And the singing voice of Disneyland.
Eden Espinosa.
So, you know, they had them all there and were really promoting that it was coming out. And now that it's out and it's a success, it feels like it's successful, they weren't invited to do anything. And the creator said, you know, it's a shame because they were expecting to be. So they had kind of put together plans for a musical presentation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what goes into what's going to be at the expo. I mean, particularly with different
business groups. Well, I'm curious
if
Comic-Con, I mean, how far in advance is Comic-Con announced? Because I'm guessing someone from Comic-Con took notice. And
yeah, I just don't know if that's the right kind of fit for Comic-Con.
Well, but I mean, Comic-Con has a lot of stuff that does well, that is well attended, that doesn't seem like the Comic-Con crowd.
Yeah, no, I mean, I go to Comic-Con, so I mean, I don't mean to deride anything, but Comic-Con tends to be more focused on like Big City Greens or even Owl House or Amphibia or something like that. Or
think you're underestimating, you know, I think you're underestimating this character's appeal to the convention going crowd, because I always see tons and tons of Tangled cosplay. I see lots of Rapunzels and Mother Gothels and Flynn Riders and Thugs and Ruffians at these events and in fan pictures of like Disney cosplay meetups.
Well, and that might be entirely true. I'm curious because you know, what does that mean for the show? Is the show not a priority for Disney Channel right now? I mean, everything is so confusing because obviously the energy is around Disney Plus, but mm-hmm. Disney Channel is still, you know, chugging along. In fact, they just premiered three new shows, Tots for Disney Junior, the animated Amphibia, and Just Roll With It. So, but there's just not a whole lot of energy there. You know, yeah. Like, I wonder if DuckTales was to be developed today, would it be on Disney Plus or would it have been on Disney Channel?
Disney Plus.
You missed an important panel announcement, though.
Yes. What would that be?
The Simpsons.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. Well, and it's been interesting to see, like, how negative the, like, Disney fan response is to it. I've seen a lot of negativity towards it. I am personally very sad that it is scheduled at the same time as the studio's presentation, because that is a can't miss moment at D23. If you're willing to line up for it. But I really am, you know, if I don't get into the movie panel, I'm gonna beeline it over to Simpsons.
It's a good, because just the way that convention is structured. You're not everyone gets into the big panel.
Yeah.
So it's nice that, you know, the B show, for lack of a better word, is The Simpsons. That's kind of cool.
That is really cool. I am surprised, though, that they haven't tried to replicate what Star Wars Celebration does with the overflow streaming rooms, only because, you know, these moments are one where you went to the convention, you paid the ticket, you took the time to get there, and now your only option, if you weren't there, you know, camping out or I guess... I don't remember what the system is this year, what they've said, but you know, if you don't get into that, you then live it like everyone else on Twitter announcements, and that's dissatisfying.
But you remember that they did try one year to do a streaming room.
Did they?
Yeah, it was on one of the sides. It was before they did Hall D23, but it was like they were live streaming the arena. And it turns out, like, nobody really wanted – nobody went.
Mm. It's weird because at Star Wars Celebration, like, those streaming rooms are still pretty full. I was in a streaming room for The Mandalorian. And, I mean, yeah, it wasn't – you know, it was a little bit disheartening because you didn't get into the main room. But you still got to see it. You got to see it live at the same time. You got to see it with other fans who are as big of a fan as you. You still got the applause and the cheering and the energy. And you still got the swag gift.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think a streaming room is the way to go. I just want to make sure, you know,
they did try it.
It's not like they haven't thought of it, or it just, I don't know why it didn't work, you know, in terms of popularity. I don't know if the Disney fans are just different or if they just didn't spread the word well enough. You know, I have no idea, but, you know.
Well, I mean, I forgot it was an option.
Well, all the expos tend to blend each other together.
The first one is, like, still very special to me, and I remember that. I think I remember that one more vividly. I will say the successive ones have all kind of jumbled together a little bit in my mind, but that first one is still crystal clear.
I think that first expo is where I met someone who would change my life forever.
Kyle?
I believe so.
Okay.
That's true. I just didn't know if you were leading up to say something silly and depress me.
That was my first time meeting you. It was my first time meeting
I didn't finish the thought because I didn't want to be presumptive and not make it seem like I was over, and then I realized we're not dating. But, like, I was...
No, that's when I met you guys.
Yeah. And I revealed myself at the time to be at the end of my crazy pin era because I was on a quest to get every single D23 branded pin from the inaugural year. I succeeded, by the way. Don't know where they are, but I have them.
That was back in an era when the Disney store got its own main stage panel.
Oh, was that the fashion show year?
Yeah.
Was it a fashion show? I just remember that I don't think it was.
I think the fashion show was year two.
Yeah, the president of Disney store came out and was talking. I don't remember there being a fashion show.
It ended with the fashion show.
That's right. Yes, it was in September. Yeah, it ended with a fashion show. It was kids trying on, like, the Halloween costumes. And one of them definitely didn't want to be there and was really having a meltdown. And stage mom was getting pretty upset. And it was really it was traumatizing for me. I'll say that. It was not the best part of my day.
It's funny because that first expo, because, like, they kind of just threw everything at it, and, you know, like, I feel like there was a lot of hidden. Remember they had the ABC preview room where you could watch
shows? I was so bummed that that never came back, and I really want to know what happened to all those mailboxes. And then
I want to know what happened to Thursday.
What do you mean?
Remember the first expo was an extra day?
Oh yes, that's right. That's right. It started on Thursday, and Thursday was like the movie day. Yeah, it was. That's right. And the first expo I will always remember as the first time I ever saw a Muppet in, like, live in person, and not a person in a giant Kermit suit, but, like, a real Muppet in front of me. I mean, now it's probably not. Maybe it doesn't feel as special because you get them at Magic Kingdom in the summertime. But I mean, that was wild.
Do the first expo is the origin of the terms Cook and Rizzullo.
Yeah, still in heavy rotation by myself.
I also remember the reaction that the Modern Family clip got, and so it's kind of poetic that the show is ending this year for the 10th anniversary of the expo.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That show's been on for a while, hasn't it?
Hey, how come they didn't do a 10th anniversary Modern Family in my collectible pin set from as my member gift?
Because it's the 11th season, but
Oh.
but also, why aren't they celebrating the 10th anniversary of Hank?
That's right. And what it was Hank and what was the other show that they
The
were pushing?
Middle and Modern Family. I feel like there was a fourth, but it was
I
another
feel
one
like
that
there
did
was a drama
decently.
too.
I don't know. I just remember Hank was like the odd man out. It was the one that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Did it even make it to air?
Yeah, it was the
Okay.
Kelsey Grammer show. It was only on for a season though.
Mm.
But he was there, and he didn't fall off the stage.
Cool going into that ABC house and sitting at your screen with your headphone and picking the pilot you wanted to see. And that was, I mean, that expo was just so, I guess, differently attended. I wouldn't say poorly attended, but differently attended in such a way that you could really do everything. I think the only presentation I encountered that I had a hard time getting into was World of Color,
I remember that, yeah.
which was a
'Cause remember they
completely.
had like a theme park stage where it's just theme park presentations for the 3 days.
It was not very big, and that's where it
Yeah.
was. Yeah, and then also the presentation, like the pitch they gave us, was like a much higher concept than what they actually ended up doing.
I'm curious to see at this year's expo. I mean, we're getting a little bit of, Kyle brought up The Simpsons, but Disney has trans unlike any other expo, Disney has transformed more this year than any other year in recent memory with not only Disney Plus, but also 21st Century Fox. So what role do they end up playing? And obviously The Simpsons is, I don't know what the word is, but showcasing that, they're fair game. Fox is fair game. So, what role is National Geographic going to have? What role is, I don't think FX is going to be doing anything, but I think
Oh my gosh, It's Always Sunny crew show up and like film a live episode. I would abandon
I
whatever
can't
I
wait
had
for
planned
the
for.
join us as Bill Rogers records your voicemail, followed by the American Horror Story experience.
They should just have different Disney stars do a panel or like a presentation where they come out and talk about all their different projects across the entire Disney spectrum. So you could have Donald Glover talk about Lion King and Atlanta, and then Jeff Goldblum can talk about his Disney Plus show as well as Thor Ragnarok.
Is there anyone that's been king of all the franchises yet?
I'm
Some pe
sure.
some people have gotten pretty close. Jon Favreau is pretty close.
Yeah.
I think he just needs to do a Fox something.
Well, I'm sure he's been in on screen in a Fox something because he's done a lot of acting work.
Because he's, de I mean, obviously, a Star Wars, Marvel, Disney. I mean, that's why he's a Disney legend, I guess. He's completed the Disney bingo. Lupita Nyong'o's done some.
Yeah, Lupita Nyong'o's done a lot.
Sam Jackson's got Miramax back to
Yeah.
Disney, sort of.
Yeah. Sam Jackson. Yeah. Miramax, Disney, Star Wars. I mean, Miramax, Star Wars, Marvel, obviously. I'd love to see him do like a National Geographic show. In any case, Expo, Comic Con, all coming up. We're probably going to try and do some quick and reaction shows out of coming out of those events. Scheduled to be determined, but there's a lot going on coming up in the next couple months, but probably not the next couple weeks. So follow us at Laughing Place and see what happens. So with that being said, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks once again to Becky for joining us last week, and we look forward to seeing you. We're going to take next week off, I think, because it's the 4th of July and we love America, and we'll join you the following week. So long.